You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sivisodi. In one era that may be offering sacrifices at a temple, in another orating a soapbox in the town square, at the city gates, or an altar in a grand cathedral. In another, writing articles and books. In another, using radio, television, or even film. Today, it's called social media. An imam, a priest, and God walk into a chat room. Sounds like the setup to a joke. But in fact, there is a growing and natural movement for religious officials to become involved in social media. Is this natural? Well, joining me to help us understand this relationship better is Reverend Sivan Kitt. Welcome to the show, Sivan.
Thank you.
Sivan, you responded to the call to be a pastor at 21. You have a master's in theology, and next week you leave the country to pursue a doctoral study. Did you always know you wanted to go down this road?
Actually, no. I've always seen myself less of an academic. Definitely not an ivory tower armchair critic. You know, But of course, I see myself as someone who is inquisitive, who likes learning. And I strongly believe in the close link between thinking and doing. You know, so often we are just activists without thinking through what we're doing. And a lot of times we have a lot of talk, but no walk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I see myself, to use one term, as a contemplative in action, you know, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. But what was that pull factor?
To go for academic studies?
That's right.
Well, I think after doing this for almost 14 years as a pastor, I realized that I needed some time to just take a step back and reflect on some of the experiences I've had, especially the last 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. in the light of my own more socially engaged activities. So I realized, you know, we can't just be doing without just taking a step back, taking stock, and perhaps have some fresh insights. Sometimes getting away helps you to look back with a fresh perspective.
What do you hope to bring back after the postdoctoral studies?
Well, one of the things, obviously, I need to finish the studies.
Mm-hmm. Which you will.
Yes, I believe so. But one of the things I hope to bring back is a better understanding of the place of religion and ethics in society. And what I'll be doing will be more specifically about Christian-Muslim relations in the context of Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important because so often religion is seen as a very divisive force in the public square, whereas I think it doesn't have to be that way.
It shouldn't be.
Absolutely.
What would you say is the core purpose of every religious and spiritual tradition?
Well, I think to start off is I have to be frank with my limitation. I speak from a particular perspective. I'm a Christian, so I'll be more familiar with the Christian expression of what the core purpose of Christianity is. And as a pastor, that's my job to do so. Mm-hmm. So from that point of view, I'll start from there. I would say that it is to invite people into what we believe or we sense is God's vision for humanity, and then encourage them to grow in a faith community and provide them with resources to serve or to live out that faith for the betterment of the world. And of course, as a Christian, I would say that would be through my belief and trust in the life and death and resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, in my conversations with people of other faiths, whether it's Muslim, Hindu, or Taoist, or even atheist, etc., I find that while we would articulate our religion in many different ways, and we do find some common grounds, things about the common good, issues that we can sign on together. And I realized that actually we can work towards a common good together. So that is the way I would approach it.
Okay. If there is one common ground, mm-hmm. that you can tell me that you share with all the other faiths, what would that be?
Well, I would say from a Christian perspective that we are all created in the image of God. We are all children of God. And there's a common humanity. And that's a starting point.
How, in your opinion, will social media help?
Well, I think in some sense, social media and religion will have a strange relationship, just like what the printing press did, mm-hmm. for the Reformation, for example. But I think it will help in a sense that it provides a platform to share the particular messages that each religion would have, for better or for worse, and hopefully for the better. And it helps connect people and gives people a chance to, at their own pace, at their own space, to find out more about each religion in their best.
Now, technically, social media are the tools used to build communities.
Yes.
However, the term social media is often referred to the dominant online social networking sites like Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, and thus confusing the whole entire situation. What's your stand on this?
You know, I think people, of course, like branding. They like trends, hype, and all that. But I think if we take a step back, basically all this are just basically expressions of the need to connect. People want to connect, and people want to share. It's interesting how, like, for example, Flickr, people just share pictures for free. And I've met someone who actually got a job out of that because he got good pictures. So that there's a lot of interesting dynamics that go on because of social media or networking. So I don't think we should just tie it down to whether Twitter is better than Facebook or blogging is the way to go. And I mean, these things come and go very fast. But I think essentially what is interesting is that we have, in my view, brought to surface what is probably in people's minds, you know, in the World Wide Web. And now through social networking, social media, the speed of it, of sharing, is much faster, and the extendedness of it is fascinating.
Right. And you are a blogger and you're a very active member of Facebook. How have these new channels of communication worked for you and your work?
You know, my surname is Kit, and I say that Kit means keep in touch. Sivan Kit is trying to keep in touch. So one of the things, obviously, is it's a great way to keep in touch. And sometimes you get surprised when you get a Facebook invite from a friend that you have not met for like 20 years, and you get reconnected. So that has been great, just to connect with existing friends or old friends. But I think for me, it has also opened up a total new avenue of connecting with new people. For example, Nicky Cheung, a good friend of ours, that's how I got connected to him through an event, and later kept in touch. And in my own preparation for academic studies in the PhD, I've had a chance to connect with other scholars, for example. So that kind of widens the possibilities of engagement. And maybe it, in some sense for me, it pushes me out of the echo chamber. I think there's a paradox here. In some sense, there's a danger of just connecting with people like you, the same kind of people. But on the other hand, it also allows for being in touch with someone who's very different, who has different ideas and probably totally disagrees with you.
But what could be the downside of this?
Well, this is the irony, right? The word friend sometimes has lost its meaning. You know, I've got like 2,000 over friends on Facebook. So that does that really mean that I'm really that connected? I think there's a certain illusion about it.
Yes. Friend and unfriend. Both have got a new dimension.
Yeah,
to
like
it.
My kids say, I don't want to friend you anymore. Now we say that as adults, you know. So I think the downside of it is that there is an illusion of omnipresence, of the fact that on one hand, I'm like, we go beyond time and space. But on the other hand, do we really connect with people? And some of us, maybe we just have a screen-to-screen relationship with someone, but don't have face-to-face relationship. I think there's some articles nowadays that says, you know, down with Facebook, get a life. So that's the reality.
Personally, do you feel we live in a secularized world, or do you feel the world today is furiously religious as it ever was, and in some places more so than ever?
Again, I guess it depends on place to place and person to person. And I guess it's a bit of both and. You can't run away from that. Let's start with secular. On one hand, there is this force I sense that doesn't want religious moral policing happening in the context of Malaysia, for example. And as a church pastor, I know my members don't want me to moral police them.
Of course.
Yeah, because there's a sense that we want to grow up. We want to learn independence, right? So there's probably some level of push towards secularity, whatever that means for different people. But on the other hand, I think we are inherently religious at some, if we define it broadly. You know, my football fan friends are very religious about whether it's Liverpool or Manchester United. No, but more specifically to religion, you know, the more traditional approach to it, whether it's Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, etc., or indigenous religions, I think we are probably being more aware that religion plays a big part in our lives, and I can't run away from it.
And how do you think social media fits into this?
I think it allows for some new way of expressing with their faith reality, allows for more direct access. For example, you know, I've got some church members who would just Facebook me, no, send me a message of their needs, or we could be connect at that level. Or I'll be looking at their wall and finding out, oh, something is going on there.
Some moral policing. No, well, not so.
I don't police, but I'll say some social networking kind of pastoring, you know. And sometimes you kind of sense, oh, something's going on. And then I do the human stuff. I pick up a phone, I call them, and then we talk about it. And well, obviously, if they put it on Facebook, they wouldn't mind me knowing about it, right? So that's some interesting things that go on, and I think that's helpful for me as a pastor.
The Vatican launched a website called PopeToYou.net, which is linked to Facebook and iPhone applications in the hopes that users can spread the word of God to their friends. Do you think this is the way forward for people and religion?
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it, when it comes
it
to the internet, right? Or the World Wide Web or the Wild Wild Web, you know, you always land up either the politicians are going to use it or those who are, you know, pawn. The other P, now we have the third pope, you know, is involved. So obviously, whether it's politics, sex or religion, they are the fastest ones to get on social media, or slowest, depending.
Yeah.
I guess it's not, for me, it's not so much the way. I think there's a problem when we think social media is the solution to spreading the faith. But at the end, it's about one-to-one human relationships. It is a natural way. I think we can't run away from it. Just like when Gutenberg Press became such a powerful force for the Reformation in the Western history, the printing press. So today we have to deal with the digital. And for me, it's fascinating because for digital media or social media, you have a mix between the oral tradition, the written tradition, and now digital.
Mm-hmm.
And all this comes together. And for religious leaders, sometimes you react against it and say, no, this is all of the devil, mm-hmm. and let's stay away from it. Or you could say, they're tempted to say, oh, this is going to be the new way forward, the new way. But I just think that it's just natural. And we have to figure out a way to use it properly,
and
I guess.
Deal with it, you know.
Yeah, you have no choice.
It's going to happen whether you like it or not.
Yeah, some of our, I remember overhearing church leaders or pastors say, you know, I'm just so upset with the young people on their iPhones during the sermon. It's so disrespectful to God.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear what they're saying, but on the other hand, how are we going to stop this? Are we going to have a special way of blocking the network?
Sermon through the iPhone, then.
Yeah. And some of my members tweet my sermons when I preach, you know. So,
right.
So it becomes a little way of their way of engaging. And of course, it kind of challenges those of us who are communicating. You know, how are we communicating? Not just on a Sunday, but also through the week. So that's fun.
Many of us feel in Malaysia when we talk about religion, I mean, we ought to have more dialogue to come to a better understanding of the different religions in this country. Do you think social media is a good platform for us? It's a mixed bag, isn't it?
Because on one hand, it allows you to have a certain distance to observe from afar what people are thinking. So, for example, right, I think it was probably some time ago, we had a Facebook for all those who supported the use of the term Allah for non-Muslims. And then we had a Facebook that was against the use of the term Allah for non-Muslims, right, in the context of Malaysia. So this was quite a big thing. Now it's died down somewhat. But it was interesting for me to see the comments going on both sides. So it gives me a sense of what people are thinking. But sometimes I wonder whether it's just a shouting match. And then the social platforms become just a shouting match of people's thoughts that hasn't been thought through. But on the other hand, for me, it has been a place where I could be in touch with people to have real sincere dialogues. For example, there's one time I had a little discussion over this issue, for example, the use of the term Allah in Bahasa Malaysia for non-Muslims in Malaysia. And we had a great in-depth conversation through Facebook messaging. And that was very private, and it was good because we could openly share our views. So there was a certain level of protection on it, right? Safety, so to speak. But I think at the end of the day, if you really want to talk to someone, have a cup of coffee, go to teh tarik, you know, meet face to face. You know, you need to see the eyes of the person. You need to feel the passion, you know. And that's more real for me at the end.
Okay.
It's about embodied experience.
With religion making its way mm-hmm. online and through social media, do you think this will leave us overexposed to religion?
I guess, yeah, since we are talking about religion, we have no choice to talk about religion. But it's the same for, as I mentioned earlier, politics mm-hmm. or even sex, for example. We are all overexposed for many things. I think it forces the users of social media to re-examine what we choose. First of all, for us, what we choose to put out or what we choose to take in. And I think that is an indirect way of forcing us to re-educate ourselves, you know, and get ourselves more mature in the way we, or more discerning in the way we look at issues and not just let the social media drive us. And usually it's what's behind the social media, whether it's the trends or the hypes and all that. I mean, Malaysia, a lot of us are online, on Facebook, mm-hmm. more than we should.
How will we control groups that are deemed to be extreme then?
And that's a tough one, isn't it? Because on one hand, we want it to be open, all right? We don't like censorship. Who likes control? Mm-hmm. My kids don't like control. They keep telling me, I want to go somewhere, I want to do my own thing. I like the phrase by Richard Rohr. He's a Franciscan priest. He's a kind of like an activist, contemplative guy. He said, the best criticism of the bad is the practice of the better. So perhaps the way forward is not to shut people out or shut them up, even so-called extremists. They will speak. They will try to advocate their views. Maybe the best solution is to have others speak up more, those who have more moderate views or progressive views or views that are much more for the common good. From within our resources, we don't have to flatten everyone and make it all boring.
You can't. Obviously. You will never succeed.
And that's not fun. Yeah. It's not beautiful. It's not real. And so I think, of course, there are some limits, whether it's the rule of law or just conscience. You know, people need to know, how to be respectful in dealing with others. And of course, definitely no to violence and inciting hatred. I think that's just out of bounds. So there are ethical boundaries that we should have. And some would seek to break those boundaries or push it. So this is something where online communities, we have to work it out. I just don't visit their website, you know.
Well, that's a good message. How does religion making its presence online help to deal with other problems faced by the world? I mean, we're talking about climate change. We're talking about a whole lot of issues, other issues.
That's a good one, because I think the recent Copenhagen big party event, right, maximized the use of social media somewhat, getting people to sign on petitions, get linked up on Facebook and all that.
Having said that, it wasn't successful.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I think we have to be more modest in the limits of social media as well as its possibilities. It's not the solve-all solution mm-hmm. to all our problems. I like the book Tipping Point. I'm not sure whether you have come across that book by Malcolm Gladwell, I think. And he mentioned for social change, for the better or worse, there are three groups of people. Mavens, people who are experts in a particular field. Connectors, those who seem to know everybody. And the persuader, the salesperson. And built into faith communities, we have these. Take climate change. We have people whom, like Professor Michael Northcott in Edinburgh, he would be an expert in about faith related to climate change, right? So he's like a maven. Mm-hmm. And you might have someone who seems to connect with all the NGOs or all the faith-based communities. So put them together with someone who can persuade, right? And all this can be done through social media. And then if people of faith are signed on to climate change and to change their lifestyle, don't use plastic bags, you know, monitor their use of their car, etc. Use a bicycle, walk more. Mm-hmm. Good for Malaysians, you know. We only walk from the car to the office. Yeah. So if we can get people of faith on board, I think it'll make a difference.
Okay. Where do you see the future of religion and social media?
Well, I think it's going to be there. I'm an advocate of the use of it. I, for one, believe in the right use of it. But I think it'll be normalized, like the way we use TV, mobile phones in the future. Perhaps what's going to be interesting in the future is for us to think deeper of how social media will change us for the better or for the worse. That's one aspect. On the other is how we can change social media to make it more human rather than less, and how we use it. So that will be the interesting trajectories that we can look at in the future.
All the best, Simon.
Thank
with
you.
With your studies abroad, and we'll see you in 3 years' time.
Yeah.
We'll have this conversation again and see how far it's gone then.
Yeah, that's right. And well, we're still on Facebook.
Yes, so. We are. Thank you very much, Reverend Simon Kitt, a pastor, talking to us about the role of social media and religion on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.